Hello, and welcome to PowerSuit Podcast, the podcast from PowerSuit Social, a network that's all about the future of the creative industries and how we make money from creative work. I'm your host, Lauren Ingram. I'm also the founder of PowerSuit Social, and in each episode, I'll be interviewing amazing people from across the creative industries, all about how we can stay employable while the goalposts keep bloody well moving. We're 1980s branded because we feel there are some parallels between the uncertain times of the early 80s and right now. So it's about time we don our power suits and take control of our creative future. The theme we're exploring in today's episode is starting your own ad agency. And I've got Natalie Graham, the co-founder of Uncommon, and I'm really excited about that. For some context, advertising has had a bit of a rollercoaster year or so. We've had management consultancies starting to buy creative agencies like Karmarama. There's been a few things that have given clients the jitters, and some of them are slashing their advertising budgets or digital budgets. And that directly affects how people that I know or socialise with or work with and how they make money from creativity. However, it's something of an open secret that turbulent times are actually a really good time to start your own business, as literally the only way is up. And so Natalie, along with her co-founders, Nils Leonard and Lucy Jameson, they staged a management walkout of Grey London in 2016. They're one of London's biggest ad agencies, and the three of them all mysteriously went on gardening leave for a year and then popped up again about 6 months ago with their agency Uncommon. She's had a really interesting career so far, and I can't wait to share it with you. Welcome, Natalie. Really glad to have you speak on the first ever PowerSuit podcast.
Oh, thank you very much.
Right, so first things first, you've taken a relatively traditional route up the industry ladder. You started out as an account manager, and you had experience at some of the major creative agencies like Fallon, WCRS and Mother. So how would you say you initially broke into advertising?
Well, it wasn't initially a kind of calling that I had. I'll be really honest, there was opportunities of work experience when I was 15 at school, and we were being offered things like shadowing a bus driver for 2 weeks, which meant sitting in the front seat when we were 15 and obviously didn't have driving licences. And so I went to my parents and said, do you know anyone who might be able to offer us something interesting? And they didn't know anything about advertising either. They were in education, but they had a friend who was actually a creative director at Ogilvy at the time. And so I managed to get some work experience at Ogilvy in the TV department. I got to go on a speedboat into work every day. And wow. You can probably imagine that obviously the rest was going to be history, because that was quite a lot of fun. So so that kind of piqued my interest. And when I was at university, I worked for Red Bull. And just kind of carried on from then. So, yes, I've worked at lots of different agencies, but I think it was quite a kind of, it wasn't initially an immediate calling. And I think since then I've worked at, I started at a place called Darcy, which, as you were mentioning, turbulent times in the industry. Agencies don't really tend to stick around for as long as you'd want them to. And that agency doesn't exist any longer. But I had my training there, quite traditional training. But since then, I've always worked at independent agencies until Grey. I was really lucky to always work directly into the founders. So I was working into Robert Senior at Fallon when that was quite small. I was working into Guy Hayward at 180, all the guys at Engine, the founders of Mother. So I've always really been very lucky at kind of working directly with founders and understanding what made them tick, really getting complete exposure to how to run an agency from the beginning. And I think as a result, probably got promoted too quickly, because obviously you just needs must, you have to dive in when you're in those small agencies, and you're getting such exposure to amazing things. So kind of, I guess, shot through the ranks a little bit at those different agencies, learnt a ton, and moved around when I wanted to learn something new. So I moved to 180 in Amsterdam when I wanted to learn more about international, and I moved back to Engine when I wanted to learn more about how we could go beyond traditional TV ads and print ads at that point. So I've tried to move every time I wanted to learn something new. And I think that's what's wonderful about our industry, is it's constantly changing. There's loads you can learn. And if you're always curious, there's always somewhere you can take it. So, yeah, I guess when I went to Grey, I thought I knew quite a lot. And actually what I learned there is that I kind of realised what we'd been up against. That was a very big agency, a very established agency that has actually been around an awful long time, 100 years. And it was incredibly interesting to learn what I'd been up against being an independent. And I learned an awful lot there about how to scale, how to go from doing something in a smaller team to be doing something with 550 people. That's a very different ask. And I learned how to be a leader. I learned an awful lot there. But ultimately, I think I probably learned more in the last year than I have in the last 15. So that's the kind of potted version of my career so far, I guess.
Brilliant. Yeah, so tell me about Uncommon. You've put out this amazing TV ad recently for OVO Energy. I just thought it was super cool.
Thank you.
Would you guys call yourselves a traditional ad agency?
I think that term feels quite restrictive these days. We love ads, and the reality is that it was really great to work on an ad that everyone's noticed as our first bit of work out there. Everyone knows we haven't just been staring at the three of us, and actually we have a team and we're putting work out there, and that feels great. And that's the power of TV. But ultimately, when we called ourselves Uncommon Creative Studio, it was purposefully about calling ourselves a studio, because there are so many things in our armoury about how we can solve brand problems and how we can create brand fame. That might be an experience, it could be PR, it might be advertising, and we're perfectly not averse to advertising at all. I think if that's the right answer, let's go for it. But ultimately, there are many other ways we can do it. I think the term ad agency as well has connotations about servitude and dependence. And from our point of view as well, I think if we're in love with brands and we want to make famous brands, that doesn't always have to be with a client asking us to make their brand famous. We can take those learnings of how to make a brand famous and create them ourselves potentially. So we've loved applying already. We've got a 50-50 split between clients who are coming to us with their brands and also brands we're creating ourselves.
So are you guys actually involved in product development yourselves?
Yes, we are. So we're actually going into Facebook testing very shortly with a couple of different products that are being co-funded by someone. I can't explain who, but those briefs have come about because of the stall, I guess, we set out at the start, which is that we believe in the power of brands. We believe that we can make them famous. And I think Halo Coffee, which Nils started in our year off, because what do you do when you can't work in advertising? You start a coffee company. I think that's taught us an awful lot about exactly how, when you're clear about the fire in your belly, about why a brand exists, you can actually, there are many different ways to make that brand famous. If it deserves to exist and people see the value of why it exists, then actually the consumers understand why they want to let it into their lives. And so we did do some advertising behind that, but very, very little, and no paid advertising. And so that's done incredibly well. So that's taught us an awful lot. It's also taught us that we don't have to be reliant on clients paying us to do that. If it deserves to exist as a product, then there's other ways of funding that, usually called investors, because they believe in the power of the business behind it. So it's an incredibly exciting time.
Yeah, it's really cool. And anyone that doesn't know, Halo is compostable coffee pods that sort of go in your coffee machine, which I think is a really cool idea. I think your stance on not wanting to put bigger budgets behind products that people don't want, that really resonated with me. I thought that was really interesting that you guys are going that route. Would you say that a lot of brands at the moment are still, would you say they're wasting money on advertising if they're putting out products that people don't necessarily want?
I think that's a really hard thing to answer. There's so much data right now. So quite frankly, I do hope they know whether they're wasting money. But there was always that old adage, isn't there, about you don't know how much you're wasting. I think there's a far more fundamental problem, which is that 75% of brands, people wouldn't care if they didn't exist. And I think you've got to start at the brand level as to why does this brand exist, and why would someone select it if there was no advertising, there were just two products in front of you? And if you're not in that 25%, why not, and how do you get there? Because that's a reason to get out of bed every day, isn't it, if someone is clamouring for wanting your brand? And I think in that context, then advertising can do many things to be able to support those brands that people want. But if you're just propping up a brand that currently sits in the 75% that people don't really want in their lives, then I think that's not really going to make the most of how advertising can really excel in pushing a brand forward. So yes, advertising can help on many fronts, but I think it isn't always the answer.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. So do you think that we'll still have agencies in the traditional sense in, say, 10 years from now? Or if not, what type of jobs do you think people will be doing, or what skills might be in demand?
Probably not in the traditional sense. So I think They probably will. There will be agencies. I think brands still need, businesses still need outside perspectives. I think sometimes it's easier for someone else to point something out or have experience across a wider field than you can when you're focused on your brand and your business. So I think partners in that sense, absolutely. But I do think it will change. I mean, we can already see that shifting already. There's a huge amount of movement as to where the value is and where we're adding value and what that structure should be. Things move far slower than you ever think they're going to. So I think there will still be a need for advertising agencies for a good while longer. But I do think we need to acknowledge that current agency structures are built to deliver a solution around advertising at scale with efficiency, and that's a very clear ask and a very good business model, and it's proven to be a good business model up until now, but they are built for scale, and as a result they're kind of stripping away the margin. And so that value that you're adding, it I know the sums don't quite add up, but you're essentially having to burn people for 15% longer to be able to get that 15% margin. So I think that's becoming very apparent to everyone involved. And whilst everyone who's excited about what they're doing and passionate about what they do is willing to throw themselves at the wall for it, as I often say, the reality is that I think that's becoming laid bare a bit too clear to the most talented individuals in the industry. So I do think there's still, for me, I'm hugely passionate about the industry. I think we have some incredible talent in the industry, and it saddens me when they're leaving. They're not going to the Facebooks and Googles, they're going and starting their own brands because they do still understand the value and power of brands. I don't think that's in question at all. When you look at most people, some of the studies that are done, they say that 20% of market cap is brand. So no one's questioning the power of brand and where we can add that. I guess the question really is how you apply that talent in the best way going forward.
What about what skills do you think will be in demand?
So from a skill set point of view, I think the incredible minds that we have who are able to think very laterally about business, but in a creative way. And I'm talking designers as much as I'm talking people that have the word creative in their title, are invaluable to businesses. Because, and I speak as someone who spends an awful lot of time looking at numbers and looking at the way a business works and operates. But actually that creative leap is takes you to somewhere where you otherwise wouldn't have gone. And I think that's often why it takes an outside partner to be able to give you that perspective. But that's also why that's a very different skill set that needs to be nurtured that doesn't necessarily fit within an organisation on a day-to-day basis. So I know there are the ways that people are trying out whether you can have that sort of mind in-house. And sometimes it works incredibly well. It depends on the business, I think. But I do think editorial and designers and creatives, those skill sets are definitely going to be needed. And I in my year off, I spend an awful lot of time with VCs looking and working with startups. And what you see there is some incredible businesses and some incredible products. But where you really see, from my perspective as well, where I get very excited, is if they had even a little bit of access to the minds that we do in the creative industries to be able to help them project a bigger shadow, as I often call it, to take that product and make it seem 10 times more impressive through the power of design or creative or editorial storytelling around that brand, that's where it gets very exciting. So I think all of those skill sets are still absolutely going to be needed, because as long as we need products and we need to find a market to sell them to, and we need to get our word out there, then designers and creative minds will help us do that. And the world's incredibly complicated right now in terms of how best to access those audiences. So from a strategic point of view, we definitely need people who help simplify and clarify where you can make the most impact as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Uncommon opened its doors, I think it's 7 months ago now. Is that about right?
About right, yeah. Yeah.
What's been the reality of running your own place?
It's blimmin' amazing, but I really wish I'd done it sooner. but that wouldn't have been possible, because one of the other learnings is I really needed to pick the right partners. So I can't big them up too much because their ears will be burning. But honestly, having worked with people before, definitely was a big learning for me. Things wouldn't be moving as fast as they are right now, and we're lucky that they are, and touch wood they will continue to, if we hadn't already worked together. So I'd encourage anyone who's looking at starting out to, even if it's a passion project, you don't have to do what we did and all have been working together. But I do think knowing where each other's strengths are, being entirely honest about where your failings are and what you're capable of and actually where that stops is really important. And that's hard if you don't know each other well enough and you're still getting to know each other. So I think my biggest learning, to be honest, so far in starting it has been how honest I've had to be with myself about what I am capable of doing. You know, nothing's for show anymore. It either results in a good action or nothing happens. And if I don't know how to do it, it just won't be done unless I set aside my ego and learn how to do it or ask someone and I'm not afraid to look stupid. And I've learned that I know lots and lots about what I do, but I don't know very much about how to start a business. And it seems to be going all right so far, which is great. But that's not something that you can learn when you're currently in your existing job. So that's been incredibly exciting and for me has been a real roller coaster of wonderful. It's like doing an MBA all at once. But equally, I didn't know any of that before I started, and I don't think you can learn it in advance until you actually roll up your sleeves and get started. So yeah, you're going to get some stuff wrong, but as long as you don't mind falling in your head, picking yourself up and asking someone how to do it right, then I think that's what's quite good fun about it.
Yeah, I'm on completely the same page, even with doing Powersuit Social. Obviously, it's much smaller scale than sort of starting a whole creative studio. But yeah, I had no idea how to make my own website, build a sort of community around it, start a podcast. I didn't know any of these things. And obviously, I was spending a lot of time Googling it. And that's a bit different for starting an agency. But yeah, there's no way I would have had time or made time to learn those type of things. Just kind of, I don't know, even in an evening class, I think unless you've got a thing to action it upon, you don't learn things properly.
That's so true. So I definitely, before we started, was staring at a blank piece of paper, having read a lot of books about business management, where I was thinking, goodness, why on earth did I not listen more in GCSE business? And wondering how I was going to work out on this P&L in front of me, how I could afford to hire an FD that could then tell me whether I was going to have enough money in the bank. And I think, you know, it's that you just got to get started. And, you know, I'm lucky in that I've been in the industry long enough that there were a lot of people that were incredibly supportive. And so a lot of people have said, oh, I know someone who might be able to help, and have you thought about asking this person? But honestly, setting your ego aside is the best thing that anyone can do in trying to start anything like this, because the reality is you just don't know. And I'm going to continue not to know. And I'm going to have to continue to keep asking questions. But that's also what I love about the creative industries generally, is that definitely when I started in the industry, it was all about you started in print and then you went up to radio and then you went up to TV. Goodness, that isn't how it works at all these days. So we've got to always stay open-minded to the fact that as long as the core of the way you approach stuff is the same, then quite frankly, it's all come in stupid every day and learn something new as you go. But it's great. It's great fun. And I've actually been very, very lucky that I've got a great team who none of whom I knew before, which is great. But you know, I can't and I don't want to do it on my own. Having that team around you is incredibly important. So you realise quite quickly when there's a small group of you quite how invaluable everyone is and how much difference they bring by just rocking up every day, which, you know, I get a bit gushy about, but it's amazing. It really is amazing to see what we're achieving in a small crew at the moment, which is lovely.
Yeah. How have you found the hiring process?
Well, the funny thing is that of our founders at the moment, there's myself and Lucy and Nils, two girls and a guy, and already we're 85% women in our team.
Wow.
So it absolutely lays bare the unconscious bias, yeah, just in a very different way.
Yeah.
So we're having to actively look at that and think, goodness, well, we need to rebalance this, because obviously 50-50 is far better as a gender split. But actually, more importantly, I think when it comes to other forms of diversity, I'm very, very conscious that I'm actively having to go out of our way to make sure that we don't fall into some very tired and very boring ways that the industry seems to have got itself locked into. So, you know, I do want to try and find people from very different backgrounds and make sure that we're helping people see the creative industries, and particularly in comms, for people to see that as a worthwhile career that otherwise just aren't considering it at the moment. So that requires you to actively spend more time on it, I think, because currently there are very few ways to naturally to make that happen.
We've been doing something similar at Dentsu Aegis, which 360i belongs to. That's where my day job is. Dentsu Aegis have been experimenting with things like for the sort of early careers, like not just apprentices, but the kind of first few roles, sometimes not asking for a university degree or anonymizing all of how you apply. And so you're just kind of, you know, HR or people like myself are given a kind of, here's applicant number 812, and they give them maybe more of a sort of creative brief to answer and see what we think of that, rather than see what we think of what university they went to and that sort of thing.
Yeah, otherwise it's very easy to fall into a hiring in your own image.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right about the unconscious bias, even being, say, female heavy. I've definitely found that with Powersuit social events. I've regularly been asked if they're events for women, because quite often it'll be almost all female panels. I try and make sure that it's not completely female. That's not diverse either. But yeah, I've quite often found that I've, say, got three women that I've already lined up, and I've kind of gone, oh God, I'm going to need to have a token man, aren't I? Yeah, that I've also been biased. I think probably a lot of the reason for me is I go to a lot of female-focused events. So things like Develop Her and She Says put on some amazing events. So a lot of the role models that they've been deliberately seeking to put on show for people, those are my role models. And so that's who I approach for sharing that knowledge with. Have you found there have been many other obstacles in starting your own business, or any sort of spanners in the works, dramas?
No dramas as yet. I know that's really boring, isn't it, to say that? I think I hadn't appreciated, there's a lot of interdependencies, so where you're going to hang out as a team is really hard. Finding a place we could call home right at the start was really tricky, and luckily we had friends who helped us out and said, come hang out here for a little bit. But the leases on stuff just take blimmin' ages. So they're the sorts of things you don't think about, because when you're already in a building in an existing company, obviously that's the one thing you definitely don't necessarily have to think about. You might think about moving offices, and that often takes a while, but starting afresh is quite hard. I guess the other thing is very, very different is legal. There is so much legal tape, red tape, contracts, everything. And I think with the right legal constructs around it, they're really, really helpful. But I hadn't appreciated quite how much in starting a company that would be required. I do honestly feel like I've got a degree in law. I've probably paid for one in the course of doing all this. But there's so much litigation that needs to be done around all of that. And so I think in terms of understanding just exactly how that can help you, but also making sure you just don't get bogged down in it all is a little bit overwhelming to start with. But being good, actually. I mean, another thing I've learned, I guess.
Yeah. And then lastly, doesn't have to be about legal, but do you have any other words of wisdom for people that are thinking of starting their own thing, even if it's, you know, quite small scale?
Words of wisdom. I guess, honestly, I think the year I had out of the industry was the most valuable. I knew in what I was doing previously what I didn't want to replicate. I knew where I felt it wasn't quite working for me individually and as the industry. But I was too close to it to really understand exactly what the answer might be. And the reason, quite honestly, I hadn't started an agency or a company any time earlier is because I was beating myself up that I didn't have the answer. And the reality is twofold. One is you're never going to have the answer. You just have to start somewhere. You should have a kind of instinct as to what you think it might be and what you believe in your gut that it should exist, even if you don't know exactly how you're going to build that. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is honestly taking time out and being forced to see the industry from very different perspectives helped me figure out what I wanted to do with my time why do I get out of bed every day? But equally, I learned a lot about, from other industries. So I don't know if you know, but I spent time doing what I called internships. So I went into a feature film production company, learning about producing feature films and casting and TV shows. I went into talent management, went to a games company. I know nothing about games. I'm not a gamer, but I learned loads about games, which was amazing. And they're also, they work a lot with the UN. So I learned an awful lot about the charitable side of different organisations, the UN SDGs. At the same time, I went to a design company, music, VCs. In doing all of that, I learned so much about how, where we can add value, in what I do is valuable and what I've learned along the way and where that expertise can come into play. But equally, I learned how other industries view us and therefore what's possible and actually what's just bullshit. What you should just put to one side and think, I was just getting tied in knots. And you know, I think when you step back from the industry, when you step back from any career you're doing, being able to take stock for a moment and then think, right, okay, that's the hill I want to go over, I think is quite exciting. And it certainly, I feel, set me up to do something different than I would have done the year before I took the year out. And I guess one last thing would be to look after yourself. So I guess one of the things I learned while I was off, but equally, is that particularly when you're starting your own thing, if you don't do it, no one will. So if you're stressed out and you haven't looked after yourself, there is no one else. So it's really important when you're starting your own business to, run at it, get excited about it, but don't do it at all costs, because otherwise, actually, that doesn't work for anyone.
Absolutely. That's about all we've got time for, but thank you so much, Natalie.
Pleasure.
For joining today. It does sound like it's been an amazing rollercoaster ride. Thank you guys for listening to the first ever episode of PowerSuit Podcast. I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. If you've enjoyed today's episode, give us a share or a star rating, then other people can find us as well. I'm tempted to say don't at me, but I literally want you guys to at me. So on Twitter and Instagram, we're on at PowerSuit Social, where you'll find 1980s inspiration and creative job vacancies. Or feel free to just DM me on Instagram. I'm on at PowerSuit Lauren. Thank you for joining.